Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we speak with writer Jeff Lowe about his current work at Marvel Comics, including work on the characters Wolverine, The Ultimates, and a new miniseries spinning out of the events of the death of Captain America, Fallen Son. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Plus, check out Jeff Loeb's Superman Batman trade paperbacks. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. March pre-orders include the first issue of DC's new Countdown Weekly series for 75% off, only 74 cents for Countdown's number 51. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com. Last week, Marvel Comics upended the comic book world and even had non-comic readers taking note of the death of Captain America. While Ed Brubaker is pulling the strings of Cap's own book, writer Jeff Loeb has the task of telling the story of the rest of the Marvel heroes reacting in Fallen Son, The Death of Captain America. In this episode of Word Balloon, we'll talk about Fallen Son and also get a look at Jeff's input in the Marvel event Civil War. But before we get started, Jeff had a request to put a personal message at the beginning of our conversation.
I have to shout out to Jesse Alexander, my partner in crime over at Heroes, because he's a huge fan, not only of comics, but of Word Balloon. And he came into my office like 2 weeks ago. This was just before you got in touch with me. So when you first got in touch with me, I sort of thought maybe Jesse put you up to it. And he said, what are you going to do with another Word Balloon? And I was like, what? And he said, what are you going to do another Word Balloon? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I just did something on Newsarama. And he goes, no, I didn't ask you that. And I said, I think I'm on Fanboy Radio sometime soon. And he goes, okay, look, all that stuff's great, but it's not Word Balloon, okay? And I like listening to Word Balloon. And I was like, okay, dude, calm down. Don't lose what little hair you got left. If it seems like a good idea, I'll talk to the Word Balloon guy. Thanks. But he kind of stormed out of my office, and I was like sitting there going, what was all that about?
Wow.
And then, literally, like 3 days later, you called. And so I have not told him that I'm doing this. So I really kind of want to let you just put it out there. And I don't, you know, there's part of me that sort of wants this to start off the story so that just as soon as he starts listening to it, he's going, what? What? Oh, what? So this one's for Jesse.
Thanks for the indulgence, and for those listening, including Jesse Alexander, there'll be more talk about Heroes and how Jesse and Jeff worked together on the show Heroes in part two of our conversation. But for part one, it has its own uniqueness as well. If you're a fan of Word Balloon, you'll know that my original conversation with Jeff Loeb took place as he was on his usual Los Angeles commute from his home to the law studios where he went to go to work. And it was a great time being there, driving with Jeff, and it turned out to be a very fun conversation. This time we started literally as Jeff was leaving WonderCon, going back home from San Francisco to Los Angeles. So our conversation begins in the cab ride, then we go to the terminal at the San Francisco airport, and then finally things do start to settle down. And in the second half of the conversation, we're in Jeff's home and in the Heroes offices, where we talk a little bit more about Jeff's Marvel books. Given your past with other Marvel stories, all the color stories, Spider-Man Blue,
yeah,
and the Hulk and Daredevil Yellow, not only because of what you went through with your son, but also your time away, are you re-energized and do you see these characters in a new way than your last tenure at Marvel?
I don't think so. I think
okay.
That passion for these characters is as strong as it ever is. It's fresh because it's not like I'm working on my 30th issue of Superman Batman.
Sure.
Where the challenge there is to continue to make it interesting. But, yes, it's exciting. It's on a number of levels to me because these are characters that a lot of the voices I've never done before. Certainly a lot of the Avengers, there's Marvel, Spider-Woman characters that Bendis has brought back from the 1970s and the 80s that I just never wrote because I wasn't part of that group. So there's element to it. And then the second side of it is like, you know, Reneal and Cassidy and Ramita were all guys. I mean, when Quesada and I first started talking about coming over there, that was part of his pitch. And I was like, you know, well, I'll just bring my own men and that'll be fine. But secretly, you know, of course I wanted to work with these guys. I'm now at the airport.
Okay, do you want to stop here and
let's stop here because we're not in mid question, and I will call you probably in about 15 minutes.
Okay, very good.
Because this guy actually missed here in no time at all.
Nice going.
Well, my guess is we'll have 20 minutes of this, and then I'm gonna have to go, and I'll be down on the ground, and I got all kinds of time. I mean, I don't know what your schedule's like, but that's fine.
We'll keep going.
I'll only tell you this: that for whatever reasons, Fortune has decided to smile down on me. I am currently sitting in the terminal, and directly across from me are three Playboy Playmates looking at their centerfolds in their own Playboy magazine.
I wouldn't have known
they were Playboy Playmates except for the fact that they're looking at pictures of themselves and pointing to themselves and showing them to each other in giggling.
Beats looking at, like, you know, Len Wein or somebody like that in the terminal as you're flying back.
You said that, I didn't say that.
And I like Len Wein. And that's a good transition for me because I wanted to ask you about the backup story in Wolverine 50. Where did the idea come from to play with the original dialogue of that initial meeting of the Hulk and Wolverine?
Well, it was, you know, supposed to be an anniversary issue. And when you're dealing with Ed McGuinness, you have to sort of begin with, who are these two guys going to fight? It doesn't matter what two guys or what book you're working on, you're starting with that idea. All right, since I'm doing Wolverine, the character that he's most associated with in the Marvel Universe as opposed to his own cast, it's the Hulk. And I just had this idea, which was that he's having all these flashbacks in terms of, you know, what was going on in his life. And would it be interesting to relive his first experience with present-day memories? And that's where it began.
Yeah, that great shocking ending. Was it just meant to be an interlude, or is this, you know, going to lead to something else down the road in your run?
It does raise interesting questions, doesn't it?
Okay. You can leave it at that if you want to.
I think that's what we'll do.
Okay.
I think the thing that was sort of confusing to me was the number of people who wrote to me and said, why did I pay homage, basically, to this scene that took place in Ultimate Hulk versus Ultimate Wolverine?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it's not an homage. I mean, look at who's in the picture. It's not exactly the same thing. Wolverine's reaction to it indicates that it's not an homage. He's remembering something that, theoretically, he shouldn't be able to remember. So we'll leave it at that.
Okay. Has the idea of Wolverine getting his memories back, like, opened this door for you in terms of characterization, where he really is dealing with this flood of, you know, new memories that he can't trust himself, even though that might be the truth?
I inherited it. So, from my point of view, it was an avenue of storytelling that could work with what I wanted to do. I knew that the Sabretooth Wolverine story that I was telling was going to encompass a lot of history because these two characters have a lot of history. What would be the most efficient way to be able to do flashbacks and memories and memory backs and dream backs that would marry themselves to the character? And because he was going through this very early stage of having this flood of memories, it was sort of the right thing at the right time. But the story I was going to tell is a story that I'm telling. It just gave a more compelling reason as to how it could happen. That's me getting on the plane.
Oh, okay. Call me on my
cell. I'll call you when I get down.
All right, sounds good,
and,
man.
And all I can tell you is these girls are really cute. And I work with really cute girls.
Yes, I mean, you do.
Panettiere and Clay Larder are really cute girls. These are really cute girls.
I hope I didn't, like, screw up your street cred by having you talk about Hulk and Wolverine while, you know...
You know what? They can't hear me.
All right, good deal.
Okay.
When we did wrap up last time, you were telling me that I had gotten your timing of joining Marvel wrong because I thought you had joined kind of near the end of when Civil War had been put together.
Just sort of to begin, when I came to Marvel, I pretty much had everything planned out. I was going to do 24 issues of Ultimates,
mm-hmm.
With Joe Madd and Ed McGuinness, and breaking it sort of the way we did Superman and Batman in different arcs, and 12 issues of at least a Spider-Man story. We didn't know where it was going to appear with J. Scott Campbell. Some project with Mike Turner, which turned out to be the Ultimate Wolverine origin. And I was pretty happy hanging out in the ultimate universe. Spidey wasn't going to be that, but I also knew that Spidey was going to be ways down the road, given how long it was going to take Jeff to do the artwork. But that was the only reason I was brought over. You know, Joe Quesada has always had a great deal of respect for me as a storyteller. And one of the things that I like doing, and one of the things that I do regularly in television, is, you know, just kick around stories. And we were back east at what was going to be my first retreat on my contract, and everyone was going around and they were pitching their ideas, and Bendis had this idea, and I really should point out that out of everybody there, I think it's safe to say that other than Joe Q, Bendis is really the architect of what happens in the Marvel Universe, just because he thinks like that, and he's been there long enough in order to do that. And, certainly in a post-House of M world, he's established himself as the person with the big idea. He had this idea that the Avengers would be involved in something, and S.H.I.E.L.D. would put together an elite task force and try to hunt them down. And, you know, immediately my story spider sense is going off. I don't have the same fondness for S.H.I.E.L.D. that other people do, and I think they're great secondary characters, but if somebody's going to go after the Avengers and hunt them down, wouldn't it be cooler if it was other Avengers? And we started talking about, you know, a way of turning the Marvel Universe against itself. And that's when Millar said that he had been watching a lot of documentaries on the American Civil War, and that he was trying to figure out how to do a story called, in his mind, Brother Against Brother. And out of that, sort of us pitching back and forth, grew Civil War. It was sort of decided then that Mark would write it. Brian had his hands full, and I really didn't have a whole lot of interest in doing something that large. I knew the kind of time commitment. I mean, it completely consumed what Mark has done for the last year. So part of my role at Marvel is to be someone who can help with those things. And, you know, J. Michael Straczynski has the same kind of role as well. He just has, we just refer to him as Zeus throwing lightning bolts down at us to explain to us what we should be doing while Mark, Brian, and I are running around like idiots. But when it came around to Cap and Iron Man and the end of Civil War and all those characters, we had to start figuring out what the next phase was going to be. And we knew what was going to happen at the end of the war, and that they were going to lose this hero. And, and that led back to the story that I was telling before and how I got pulled into doing Fallen Son. And that really was the first thing I've done since I've been there that has grown out of someone else's idea and at the same time exists on its own. When I came over, there are a few stories that I still want to tell. I haven't quite figured out how to do that. One of them was this reconciling the relationship between Wolverine and Sabretooth. And Quesada knew that I had that story in mind. And we just both agreed that if the right artist came along, you know, in my mind I was doing it with Andy Kubert, but Andy was no longer going to be at Marvel.
Right.
So I just put it on the back burner. And so when he called and said that Simone was interested in going on Wolverine, I knew then I could do that story. And I could actually do it a little more the way I wanted to, in that it would be have a little more grit in it.
Absolutely.
Andy is a brilliant artist, but tends to draw what I would say is pretty.
Yes.
And I think that's great. I don't. That's not a criticism. That's, you know, I would love to work with Andy. But once I knew that Simone was on there, the level of violence and the savagery that we could get into just opened up a better version of the story. And believe me, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, that's great. I mean, yeah, when you got half of Wolverine's face ripped off and he's still fighting, I thought that was pretty cool to begin with. So
that was just something that I just kept thinking about. You know, it in some ways was kind of inspired by the Marvel Zombies. But I just kept thinking about, you know, what it would be like if two guys were fighting on a jet plane and they blew up and they just kept fighting. And then, you know, that their skin would be on fire and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, sometimes sort of cool images lead you to a place where you can get in the story, particularly when you're telling a story which is about two people who want to kill each other. It's trying to come up with things that are hopefully visually exciting so that it's not repetition of what's going on.
Do you mind recounting the story and explaining how the assignment, you know, was created?
We have these creative retreats. And this one happened to be around Christmas time. So it being the beginning of March right now, this came together incredibly fast, which is one of the things that I really like about working at Marvel, that something like this could get put together. On the first day, there's like 40 people in this room. It's a handful of creators. This particular one, it was me and Bendis and Dan Slott, and most importantly, J. Michael Straczynski. I'm sure there were other people, and I'm sorry if I've forgotten that some of you were there.
Was Brubaker there?
He was not.
Okay.
That was sort of the joke. and actually, the idea was, and I mean this with all fun, that any time anyone went to the bathroom, we would then make a suggestion for their book and then try to fuck them up any way that we could. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
You're all absolutely allowed to say that.
And so, but it's, you know, it's just a joke. But the idea was is that, you know, every time we had a big idea, you could see Brevoort, who's Brubaker's editor, you know, the veins in his head would just get bigger because he knew what Brew had in mind and wanted to make sure that none of this was screwing up what Brew was doing.
Okay.
And believe me, if any of it did, we would have unraveled it all. But we were going around the room, and what happens is each of the editors talks about each of their books, and you have to kind of know Tom Brevoort, and that's that he's, you know, he has two modes, which is he's mild-mannered Tom Brevoort, and then he's blast-art a living bomb burst when you hit on something that might change continuity.
Okay.
So, you know, he stood on the bridge and had to be convinced that Wolverine and Spidey could join the Avengers. He was stood on the bridge and had to be convinced that bringing back Bucky was a good idea. So he's really sort of our BS detector.
Okay.
He's been there. Move his way. I think he's the only guy that remembers that I once worked on Cable and X-Force. And I adore Tom. So he's, you know, reading through his list of the 93 books that he has, most of which are with Bendis.
Right.
And he gets around to Captain America, and he says, you know, in Captain America 24, Captain America finds the Serpent Crown, or whatever it was. And then in Captain America 25, Cap dies, and then in Captain America 26, it's the Falcon and Winter Soldier's reaction. And I went, whoa, hang, stop! What do you mean Cap dies? And, like, everyone in the room suddenly looked at me, and like, I'm the idiot. And it's because I missed a summit. I was at the Civil War summit, then there was sort of a summit in between, and then there was this one. And everyone looked at me and said, yeah, well, that's what happens after Civil War. And I said, no, hang on a second. I remember Cap getting wounded, but he's die-dying? And everyone in the room says, yeah, guy dying. It's already written and drawn. And I was like, wow. So what are we doing? And he was, what do you mean? And I said, this is Death of Superman, guys. This is every media outlet. This is newspapers. This is Joe goes back on Stephen Colbert stuff. Like, are we, is every book going to have a black shield on it? Are we doing World Without Cap? Are we doing Bureau? What are we doing? And everyone in the room was like, oh, it's interesting.
Really?
Because it really was going to be, the feeling was that after Civil War, that to have another event maybe wasn't what should be done.
Yeah.
And again, I wasn't there for the decision, so I couldn't have said this months before. So that's when both Quesada and Buckley were like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. If all this is happening just in Cap and Avengers, because Bendis actually is dealing with it.
Sure.
I don't know that the Fantastic Four or any of the other books need to come to a grinding halt. But,
right.
But there ought to be something that, I don't know whether or not it's a miniseries, I don't know what it is, that sort of takes a moment for the Marvel Universe to reflect on what's going on. And, you know, a bunch of ideas get batted around, and then all of a sudden, you got to understand at these retreats that JMS speaks 2-3 times a day. And when he does, it's Zeus throwing down lightning bolts. It's,
okay.
It's not going to be, you know, some stupid idea that I've come up with. Because I'm just talking my mouth off, if you can actually imagine that. Bendis and I just spend the entire time going, that's a stupid idea, that's a stupid idea, that's a stupid idea. And JMS, and I remember he's holding a yellow pad in his hand, reading it off, and he says, it's 5 issues. The 5 stages of grief. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally, acceptance. And the moment he said it, I knew exactly what it was. I sort of picked up the ball and started to run with it. And I said, the first one is Wolverine, and it's denial because he doesn't believe the Cap is dead. He's going to want to find proof. And the second one is anger, and it's the Avengers, and they're pissed off about what's happening, and they take it out on some poor schlub who didn't know what was going on, and they're beating his brains in. And it's bargaining, and that's, you know, the focus on Captain America, and should there be another Captain America? And the fourth one is depression, and the only person you could do that with is Spidey. And then it's acceptance, and the acceptance falls on Iron Man and Tony, because he's the one who has to go the furthest. I said, then we need to get, like, the greatest artist ever to do this. And at that point, I can see David Bogart, who's in charge of scheduling, he's like hitting his calculator and like smoke's coming out of it, and he's trying to figure all this out as I'm going, look, if we're going to do Wolverine, it's got to be with Lemieux, because he's like, as far as I'm concerned, he's the most exciting guy prior to Simone Bianchi to draw this character, so that's who it's got to be. And it's too bad if he's drawing New Avengers. But the thing about Lemieux, so fast, he can do 2 books in a month, so no one's worried.
Okay.
And I said, and I think we can pull McGinnis out of Ultimates because we're ahead, and he should do the Avengers because it's got to be big and it's got to be like Superman, Batman with a million characters running around, and let him design the hell out of it and it'll be fabulous. For the Captain America one, I am determined to do a much more comprehensive Captain America story one day, and it's got to be with JRJR, John Romita Jr., because I can see his Cap in my mind, because I know he's drawn every hero in the universe, but he's never done a Cap story, like a formal Cap story where Cap is the lead. And JR is also fast enough that he could do 2 books because he's on World War Hulk. And then I said, look, I have no idea where Finch is on Moon Knight. And someone says, well, he's wrapping it up. And I said, well, do you know what he's doing next? And no, we need to find something. And I was like, great. You know, we need, because I know that he loves Spidey and that he wants to draw Spidey. So this is a chance for him to do that. And you know, and everyone in the room was sort of, well, it's kind of making sense. Yeah, it could happen. And then I said, and now I'm going to make everyone's head explode, and that is, if we're going to do the last one, it's going to have the whole Marvel Universe, and we're going to need Cassidy. And then sort of Paul falls out the room. And I said, look, I understand that, you know, he's doing what he's doing, and I know that Astonishing is a huge commitment, but come on. I mean, he's the biggest Cap fan in the world. If we're going to legitimize this, we need him. And on that one, everyone was like, well, we'll see. And
sure.
Quesada turned to me and said, if we do this, you're going to have to go to Joss. Because you guys are friends, and we're not asking him. So I was like, oh, get off me. And then there was, you know, some more machinations that had to go on backstage in order to sort of make it happen. And, you know, schedules and my own schedule with Heroes. And they're concerned about whether or not I was going to be able to do it. And when could we do this? And what did that mean to Cap 25? And again, you know, the universe has a way of sort of responding to the right thing, maybe. Or at least has a sense of humor, and I don't get the joke. And that is that McNiven was late, or Millar was late, whoever was late, on Civil War 7. So you couldn't do Cap 25 until 7 came out. They were determined to get 7 out by the time the New York Con was happening. That was going to happen. And so that meant the Cap got moved into March. Once that happened, the Cap moved into March, because 26 takes place at the same time as some of these stories, then Fall and Son fell into April. And then we started thinking, okay, so we could have 2 in April and we could have 3 in May. But that meant I had to write 5 scripts at once.
Wow.
Not like what I normally do, which is I write a script, I wait 6 weeks, I wait till my artist gets to about page 15, and then I write the next script.
Okay.
I simply don't have the time.
Sure.
So this is during Christmas break, and I'm sitting there going, oh, piece of cake. You know, I'm not going back until January 3rd. It's now December 19th. I'll write all 5 during that time. Yeah, well, it wasn't going to happen that way. But what I did do is I took some time off, and I sat with my yellow pad, and I broke all of the stories, which is really, for me, the hardest part, which is sort of beating out what was going to happen in all of them, and that I had. So then it was just about stealing, you know, weekends and late nights and keeping up with Wolverine and Onslaught Reborn, which are the ones that are ongoing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And those are winding down, so, you know, pretty soon either I have to find something else to do or I'm writing a lot of Ultimate scripts that will be drawn eventually, which I can do. And this, trust me, even though I'm saying it this way, it's going to bite me on the nose at any point. Because one of these guys, just, you know, it happened on the last issue of Ultimates, was that all of a sudden Joe drew 6 pages in a week and was like, okay, I'm done.
Wow.
I was like, listen, I kind of thought we had 3 more weeks here. So I'm sure one of them is going to pop. You know, Jessica Campbell's very close to finishing an issue of the star of Spider-Man.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a script that's needed there. But in the meantime, my immediate responsibility was to Fall in Time. And then, you know, they managed to pull all the guys together. I did speak to Joss, and Joss's attitude was, if Cassidy wants to do it, then that's okay. I'll make room. And that took its own particular kind of planning. But again, I can't really stress enough that Quesada and Buckley and David Bogart just went after this wholeheartedly. I mean, by the time we got to the first of the year, they had found everybody to make this book happen. On the schedule, what it was going to look like, who was going to design it, the people that I wanted on my team. It was just one of those things. And then, you know, we started it at the first of the year, And the other thing that we had to work together with was with David Gabriel, who does the previews. He's the marketing guy.
Okay.
And so we couldn't say what this book is called, which
sure.
is Fallen Son, The Death of Captain America. And so we all agreed that we would call it Civil War Fallen Son, which was accurate,
right.
and just be vague and let both the readers, who you know now have this ability to look 3 or 4 months ahead, particularly online.
Certainly.
Which, you know, when I was reading comics growing up, all you got was in the back, newsstand soapbox, what was selling that month.
Yep.
And so it's really hard to keep a secret like this. And it somehow kept. I have no idea how it held. I have no idea how we managed to keep Cap's death out of the mainstream media. But the night before last Wednesday, again, it's one of the things that I kind of marvel at, pun intended, they lined everything up and the story broke. And of course, you hope when you're doing something like this that the Pope doesn't die that morning.
Sure.
Or that we go into Iran. Because if that happens, we're on page 23 and nobody really knows.
Absolutely.
And we had, in all fairness, a slow news day. Followed by a slow news day. So the media made this the biggest story ever. And that's pretty great. I think it's particularly great for Brubaker, who's, you know, carried that book on his back, and now he gets a chance to kind of shine and have people read his work, and that's kind of what this is all about at the end of the day. You want as many people reading your stuff as possible. And Fallen Son is coming together in a way that makes me very happy. The idea of doing the 5 stages of grief that JMS graciously handed up was something that, because of my own experience with my son, is something that I'm very much aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak to it as any kind of authority, and I can't speak to it as whether or not it's accurate and, oh, well, as soon as you finish anger, you move right into bargaining. But I certainly understood it, and I certainly understood how these characters could talk about what was happening. And I really felt like that I was the best person to tell this story. For the wrong reasons.
Yep.
I hate being able to say that.
Sure.
But I've got to put it out somehow. And if that's the way it's going to come out of me, then that's the way it's going to come out of me. I haven't really written about my son's death with the exception of the small backup story that I did with Tim Sale in Superman Batman 26.
Absolutely.
Which I wrote 10 days after my son passed, and I still think is one of the best things that I've done, and speaks to the power of comics and the talent of Tim Sale's illustrations. And of course, I can't read without crying.
Yeah.
And there's some moments like that that are in this, but I also wanted to tell a story that was entertaining as well, because I knew that this wasn't just a miniseries for the fan man. This was going to be something that mainstream press was going to read, and that you had to sort of have an understanding as to who these people were. And it's hard. It's hard not to get all tangled up in, you know, who everybody is. And so that's the challenge. The challenge is to be able to, you know, hand Fallen Son over to somebody and have them go, oh, okay, I kind of know who these guys are. And then the guys that are drawing it they're really, it's funny because I've talked separately to them, with the exception of J.R.J.R., because he has nothing to prove. they all wanted this to be like their best work. They want, because they're looking like, well, this is going to get collected with those four other schmoes, and I got to make sure that people don't go, wow, it's really great. There's four of them put their heart in it, and there's one guy decided to hack it in. Not to say any of them would do that, but we are under a deadline pressure, and you do shortcuts. And,
sure.
But these guys are total pros, and so they have some lead time. And you know, it's still March, and you know, the guys that are doing the April books are in April. I'm sorry, in May. And I think it's really good. I don't say that about a lot of things up front. I usually let it lay on the artist until someone reads the story. But these I like.
That's cool. The were you at DC during Death of Superman? I know I can't remember the chronology of Challengers.
No, I wasn't. At that point, I really wasn't in comics. This is sort of like between 91 and 94, I had done the Chal story,
mm-hmm.
and then I really didn't do anything. I guess I'd done maybe one of the. I think in '93 was when the first Halloween special came out. But you know, if you're over in Archie Goodwin land doing Legends of the Dark Knight, you're not interfacing with anybody,
right?
But I actually know that that's the case because of the disagreement that I had had with Mike Carlin over Challengers. Had basically, I don't want to say I was blacklisted, but I certainly was not invited to do anything. And it was that Christmas during the Reign of Superman, which would have been the end of '93.
Okay.
That I was at the Christmas party that was out here at Warner Brothers, and they flew out a bunch of guys from the East Coast. And at that party, Carlin came over and said, "How would you like to write the Action Comics annual for next year?" And that's when the ice broke and thawed, and then I could work anywhere I wanted to. I didn't know anybody at Marvel. And it wasn't until the Batman thing came out that the people at Marvel called and asked whether or not I wanted to work in the X-Men office. So that's kind of the time period.
Okay.
That we were in. I was so thrilled to do the Action annual until I found out that it didn't have Superman in it. That it had to be with the Eradicator. Ooh, that was great. But you know, you do those things. You know, it's one of the things that I try to tell writers that are breaking in. You know, I was, whether it's arrogant or foolish or hopeful, you know, when I wanted to do my first comic book story, I wanted it to be Superman or Batman.
Sure.
And, you know, they don't give you those first time out of the box. They kind of got to know that you can actually do this. And so, you know, I didn't even know who the Challenge of the Unknown were when I accepted the assignment.
That's wild.
And I picked them because they were on the list. And I had to go out and I read the entire run and I was like, boy, I got my work cut out for me. So, yeah.
Okay. I had wondered if you had maybe in you know, doing anything for Fallen Son, if you went back and saw how DC handled, you know, that whole post-Superman death.
No, I think having kind of my memory of it is probably better than going back and taking a look at it. And that,
sure.
You know, Tom Brevoort is sort of the UNIVAC of comics, and I'm sure he could probably tell me every line and every panel of every book that's ever been published, so that if I happen to bump into something, so he's not going to let any of that get by.
Well, I'm curious, and not to even tease what's happening in your story, but based on the real world reaction to Cap's death and the various political editorials that sprang from it, or the, you know, television and radio pundits that had their chance, from parodies with Stephen Colbert to, like, you know, real grist for people like Sean Hannity and Michael Medved and some of the, you know, real conservatives out there and stuff. And I just wondered if you found that interesting, the various perceptions of how they read this symbolic death.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at it from the point of view that Steve lived his life as a hero. It's what he wanted. It's what he dreamed of. And his death, as it is with any good individual, is a tragedy. And the best thing you can do in that regard is to celebrate their life. And the fact that different people want to make hay out of it, great. It's still comics. And, you know, I'm much more interested in how the Avengers feel about this than how some conservative radio pundit decides to spin the story. You know.
Or liberal, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is where fun making fun of that.
Yeah, I hear you.
But, you know, no, it's not going to, I mean, George Bush ain't coming around in this story. You know, I'm just
okay.
Not. That stuff always pains me, largely because, you know, these things are going to be around 20 years from now. And when you open them up and you look at it, there's Jimmy Carter smiling, making some peanut joke. He's sitting there going, what? What the hell?
Well, I do remember Clinton's kind of, and I don't remember the words as you do, you know, as you say too. It's what I remember from my memory. But seeing Clinton and Hillary commenting on Superman's death, I thought was like, oh, that's interesting. They really did pull the real world in, as opposed to President Wormwood or whoever
right.
Mark Waid came up with in Kingdom Come.
yeah, again, I just think you got to be careful of that stuff. I mean, you know, that's why I loved that it was Lex Luthor for a while.
You bet.
I sort of, you know, I think that's what it ought to be. Now, you can't do that stuff in the Marvel Universe because they'll just slap you down.
President Fisk, Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, exactly. They just look at you like, wait, you mind? and then, you know, and over in the Ultimate Universe, they really won't let you do that.
Right.
But, you know, my feeling when we made Lex president was, how many stories do you do with the real president? So, guys, let's not, you know, suddenly have President Lex turning up in Manhunter, because it's just ridiculous. And I think we sort of fell somewhere in the middle. We may not have used him as much as we should have, and we certainly didn't overuse him, which I was being very cautious about. So, you know, the other thing is that this story all takes place relatively quickly. And so I really wanted to focus on the characters who are the leads in Fallen Son. It's not, I'm not doing, you know, World Without Cap. That's somebody else's job. These are personal stories of these characters and how they interact with what has happened.
Okay.
So that I don't particularly wanted to tell the story of what's going on in, quote, the real world, because, first of all, I think that's Brubaker's responsibility and his story. But secondly, Fallen Son was designed to help the readers enjoy and understand how Wolverine, the New Avengers, Spider-Man and Iron Man are dealing with this tragedy, and the tagline that I came up with for it is, you know, Captain America has died. This is what happens next, and that's what it's about. It's not about whether or not the world wants to turn it into a metaphor. For the world to do.
We'll pause there, but the conversation is far from over, because in part two, Jeff Loeb and I talk about the current barrage of comic events coming out from the big two companies and some interesting behind-the-scenes details about the surprise hit of the television season, Heroes. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Plus, check out Jeff Loeb's Superman Batman trade paperbacks. And don't forget to visit InStock Trade's sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. March pre-orders include the first issue of DC's new Countdown Weekly series for 75% off, only 74 cents for Countdown's number 51. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com. Thanks a lot for listening. Make sure you come back for part two of this conversation with Jeff Loeb. Until then, this is John Suntress. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2007.